Okay, we will resume and take up item 821, please.
821, direct the Portland Revenue Bureau to transfer the City of Portland's portion of transit lodging taxes collected from short-term rentals to the Housing Investment Fund starting July 1, 2015.
Commissioner Salzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This resolution, introduced by myself and Commissioner Fish, provides a revenue stream for the development or preservation of affordable housing on the collection of transient lodging taxes from short-term rentals, something this council just legalized last week, and established the mechanism to ensure that the lodging taxes are being paid. And this would start July 1st of 2015, so it would not affect the current year budget that we've already adopted. And I guess I would say, I know many of you are saying, why not wait until the next budget season and deal with this then? I guess I would like to submit that this is something that cannot wait. I have been housing commissioner for 14 months. We've had a great discussion this morning on a lot of issues germane to housing and homelessness issues. And I think that one thing that I have learned in the 14 months that I've been housing commissioner, and I always say that you never know what you don't know until you become the commissioner in charge. And really has given me, has opened my eyes to the tremendous challenges that we face in the city to meet the needs of many of our most needy residents. And we are undergoing, point A, the rental market is extremely tight right now. Our vacancy rate is one of the lowest in the nation. It hovers around 3%. So there's not a lot of housing choice out there, and a lot of it's not affordable. Second, we are undergoing, in Portland, the largest multifamily unit construction boom in recent memory, and perhaps even in history. Some 10,000 units are scheduled to come online in the next 2-3 years. And I'm sad to say that the market share that's going to be affordable to those who make 60% or less of median income, or even those who make 80% or less of median income, is really quite small. We do well in urban renewal areas where we have 30% set aside to invest in affordable housing. The council has been generous. It has approved $1 million in this year's budget for a one-time investment in increasing the supply of affordable housing. But we are really behind the eight ball. And this is an opportunity to catch up. And I'm going to try to sort of connect the dots on why we should take this action today with respect to the transient lodging taxes on short-term rentals. And then I'll turn it over to Commissioner Fish, who probably has some remarks as well. But the need is great. The opportunity here is to capture some $500,000 a year in transient lodging taxes that will now be paid by people who are making their rooms in their homes or their accessory dwelling units available for rent under organizations like Airbnb and other short-term rental organizations. The $500,000 generated in transient lodging taxes, estimated, could be used to do revenue bonds to generate $5 million a year that we can invest in affordable housing. So that's real money. This is a real opportunity, because what's missing in most of our actions is a steady state, reliable stream of funding. Other than urban renewal, which is on the decline, federal resources, which are static, are on the decline. This gives us a chance to take our own destiny into our own hands with some local resources and start making a serious dent. So I know the council shares all these desires. I just hope that they will look at this and decide that now is the time to take this action. I'd like to just briefly mention the organizations, some of whom are here today, who have endorsed this approach. We heard this morning from the Human Rights Commission. That was news to me, but they clearly support this approach. Elders in Action, the Portland Housing Advisory Commission, the Oregon Opportunity Network, the Portland African American Leadership Forum. I know we have a Pano representative here today, so I'm assuming a Pano supports it. And then, of course, Israel Baer, who is the editor of Street Roots, is also here. And I guess I would just close by saying I would urge my colleagues to take this action now. As I said, it will not affect anything in this year's budget. And I'll use the test that Commissioner Fritz just used earlier under her SDC statements. Who pays for this? Who pays are the people who now provide short-term rentals to guests that come to our city and others. And in the process of doing so, and I have no qualm with them doing this, but I think we need to recognize that this does displace people who you look for rooms to rent, people who look for roommates to share houses with, and people who are being displaced from neighborhoods. That's who pays for this. Who benefits are people who historically are renters. They are roommates, they rent rooms, they rent houses, and they want to stay in their neighborhoods. And I think it's pretty intuitive that as the supply of short-term rentals increases, the supply of these historic affordable rental resources is going to decrease. And as I say, I think we've heard there's plenty of positives to Airbnbs of the world. They do provide homeowners additional sources of income. They provide socialization opportunities for people, and they provide good ambassadors for the city of Portland. So there's a lot of positive things about Airbnb, but there is this one dark side that I don't think we can ever expect a PSU research team to quantify for us. So we could wait 5 years before they're going to quantify something. They're never going to find the people who no longer rent the rooms. They're never going to find the people who no longer rent the accessory dwelling units because they've been converted into short-term rentals. But believe me, they are there. So I think, who pays? The people who are doing short-term rentals. Who benefits? The people being displaced. Is it fair? I believe it is fair to take this action today. I believe it's fair and it's necessary, and it's entirely elegant to connect the dots on this one and to take an action today. I now like to turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner Fish, the co-sponsor, for any opening remarks he may have. And I think we have about six people signed up to testify.
Well, first, Dan, I'm very proud to co-sponsor this resolution. I am mindful of the fact that we are on a tight clock here, and since some of my remarks echo your very eloquent opening statement, Mayor, why don't we go to testimony, and then I'll reserve my comments for a closing statement.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anyone else? So let's take the sign-up sheet, please, Carl.
Okay, we have about seven people signed up. The first three, please, come on up are Joe Walsh, Ben Pickering, and Lightning.
I believe Mr. Lightning's still here. The other two, I believe, have left.
Next two?
Okay. Next two
let's
after
go
that.
With June Johnson and Cameron Harrington.
Okay, come on up.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Think Lab.
Thank you.
Sure. Basically, again, as I've stated my concerns on Airbnb in the past on this, now I do agree with this lodging tax. One of the issues I had was in the past some of the hosts operating illegal and not being assessed fines. I like the fact of this money going in this direction, and actually there has to be replacement for the displacement, and there's going to be a lot of displacement throughout the marketplace because of this. And it doesn't take anybody very long to figure out if somebody's renting a room in their house at 300, they can maybe make 3 to 4 times in 1 month. Somebody's going to be probably getting an eviction notice. So that's the displacement that will take place throughout the city. Now, at what percentage? We don't know yet. There's been a lot of studies in San Francisco. They're renting about 5,500 listings now in New York. They've made a complete stance against Airbnb and actually want them to shut down, and that's being negotiated right now. So we're watching a lot of new things go on, and like I say, I agree with this being legalized in Portland, but we have to also look at the point of where the displacement is going to occur, and this program here is beginning to adjust and understand that money will be set aside to go in that area. So I do commend Commissioner Saltzman on the effort here. Again, I just want to watch Airbnb real close, and there's been some other competitors who have stepped up to the table, Vacasa Property Management and other firms that feel they have lost that competitive advantage in the marketplace, the way Airbnb has had a strong presence without it being legalized. So I kind of still want to watch that close. And, we were talking about maybe hitting a fine on the host. I wouldn't mind to see Airbnb come to the table and say, hey, We've utilized these many hosts out there this many years, and we're willing to pay a set amount of dollars and place it into maybe a fund like this also. And I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to do at this time, because somebody has to pay that fine, either the hosts or possibly Airbnb. And there have been some fines assessed in New York on various hosts up in the millions of dollars, and that is a fact. And even they're making a strong example of what has happened in the past on this situation on short-term rentals. And I'm hoping Airbnb recognizes that and understands that there has to be some accountability on that issue and get that taken care of. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you very much. My name is Cameron Harrington. I work with the Living Cully Coalition, which is a collaborative effort of Verde, Hacienda Community Development, NEA, and Habitat for Humanity, Portland Metro East. We're here today to speak strongly in support of dedicating this new revenue to the Housing Investment Fund. Living Cully has a vision of a city where low-income households and people of color have housing choice and opportunity in all of our neighborhoods, in Cully, in Inner North and Northeast Portland. And the city of Portland is far behind the need for affordable housing to prevent displacement, and is far behind the actions that our peer cities on the West Coast have taken to take the challenge of affordable housing seriously. Seattle, for example, has a dedicated housing levy that has been renewed by the voters for several decades.
Can I just comment on that for a second?
Yes.
Because that's a completely misleading statement. The only reason the city of Seattle went out and did a levy is that the city did not use any of its own funds to fund housing. So they did with a levy. Now, you and I are on the same side of many fights. Mm-hmm. But I don't want the public to think that because Seattle chose to fund their investment through a levy and we've chosen to use urban renewal and general fund dollars that we're behind Seattle. We've spent $250 million in the last 5 years of local dollars to invest in housing, which swamps what Seattle has invested. So we're on the same side, and I appreciate your advocacy, but to say that we're behind Seattle on this is a gross distortion.
My intention was to say that we do not have a dedicated stream of city-generated funding that is not connected to urban renewal, that is flexible and versatile, that goes on from year to year, and that we can count on without having to have budget fights over it.
With that qualification, we completely agree. But to the taxpayers of Portland who, through urban renewal and general fund, have invested $250 million, I don't want them to feel like they have to apologize to the people of Seattle, because they've made a huge investment. And in some ways, the 30% is a dedicated source of funds. It's not enough, and I'm with you, but we were well ahead of Seattle on that one.
All right. Well, that is correct. We have spent 30% of urban renewal funding on housing. The fact remains that tens of thousands of people have been displaced from our urban renewal areas, and tens of thousands of more people stand at risk of displacement from those areas and from other neighborhoods. We know that. It's documented. And we know that this amount of revenue will not solve our affordable housing problem, but we do know that it can be an important precedent, and it can be an important first step in this city saying that when the housing market is being used to provide for non-housing purposes, for vacation rental purposes, and revenue is being generated from that, and as a result housing is being removed from the housing market, that we can capture some of that revenue to mitigate the displacement effect that that market is having. And so this is an important precedent, this is an important opportunity, an important first step in a longer conversation for developing more robust solutions to housing affordability, both in the urban renewal areas and in other parts of the city.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello. Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor Hale. My name is June Howard Johnson. I have lived in Portland all my life for 59 years. Yes, I am a senior. I'm a college graduate. I'm a member of the Multnomah County Mental Health Advisory Council and Health Share Council also. I do prison ministry through Coffee Creek for the women, and I'm a certified mentor. and I have 10 years of volunteer breast cancer. I never imagined someone with my experience would become homeless, but that's what happened last year. I was a tenant at this apartment for 15 years. It was a triplex in Inner Northeast Portland. I couldn't find an apartment. It was during November. I couldn't find an apartment, and they gave all three of us time to get out. But I had the hardest time trying to find placement. I even went as far as Beaverton, Hillsboro, areas that I would never, ever want to live in. I had applied. And I was homeless briefly, and it was very scary. Now I have an apartment again. I'm way out in Maywood, Gateway area, which I'm really not happy with it because I'm used to the Inner Northeast area, which I plan to move back soon. And it's good for Portland to grow and develop, but we have to take care of people like me, that we need more affordable housing. And just because, you know, I got new landlords, they were from West Lynn, so they decided to put us out, and they wanted to remodel the apartments, double the rent. They still haven't finished with the apartment. I've been out since November. The apartments are still not ready. But they wanted us out so soon. And, you know, I don't think it's fair for us tenants to have to be moved out in the cold, hard winter when they're still not finished with apartments yet. And I think that they need to work more on that, giving us a longer time and knowing that they're not ready to vacate the premises. I mean, you know, to have renters in there yet. They were turning them into condos or whatever they wanted to do. But I'm just saying, I just hope that you guys help us with more affordable housing so we won't have to go way out to these different areas and districts.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, Carla, next.
The next three are Joe Walsh, Todd Struble, and Rachel Gilmer.
Go ahead,
Mr. Walsh. Go ahead. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice, and we're taking a position. We're opposing this, and we're not going to argue anymore because we grow weary of arguing with you. And you're going to do any damn thing you feel like, so just do it.
Why are you opposing it?
We're opposing this because we think that there's a significant problem on the east side about low-income housing, and there's better use of this tax money that you're using. We don't think that the people watching this or in the audience that is listening to this have a complete understanding of what you're doing. Unfortunately, I was out in the hall talking to somebody on an issue that was important. So I missed a lot of the discussion that was going on, and you probably answered some of my questions. However, we've taken the position we oppose this, and I think in the future, unless I'm overridden in one of the meetings, we would take the position that we go on record opposing what you're doing and not argue with you anymore. We just grow weary. There's a recall going on. There is a big battle going on. We think the mayor is leading us in the wrong direction. We think that people are just rubber stamping everything that's going on, and we grow weary of it. So we're just going to go on record opposing it, so you can't say down the line nobody's opposed it. So if somebody in front of me does oppose it, then I'll just say second the motion. Thank you.
Thanks. Welcome.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Mayor, My name is Todd Struble, and I am from APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. And my role is the J District Manager, so I manage one of the MPIs out in East Portland, right there on 82nd Division. So my job is to be out in the community and kind of hear the concerns of the residents there, people that own their businesses out there, and try to help that area develop economically while preventing displacement. So we would like to go and put ourselves on the record as being in support of this motion to fund affordable housing from the revenue from transient housing tax. So APANO has a base of over 3,000 supporters with a significant number living in East Portland. Our communities span new immigrants and resettling refugees and also members of the Portland community that have been here for generations. Our city is facing a growing affordable housing crisis, and it's disproportionately impacting communities of color. APANO's report with the Coalition of Communities of Color revealed that 52% of our Asian Pacific Islander community members are paying over 30% of their income for housing in Multnomah County, as compared to 40% for white people. Asian and Pacific Islanders are also one of the fastest growing communities in Portland and in Oregon. Asians grew 40% over the last decade, and Pacific Islanders 68%. Our total population is now over 220,000, with the most significant concentrations in Portland and East Portland. I think it's already been well covered that the short-term rentals and Airbnb are going to drive up the cost of housing and drive down affordable housing. So again, just reiterate that we're in support of a city tax that is 100% dedicated to increasing affordable housing. And then I think also, as Cameron mentioned from Living Coley, this is something that we're in support of, but it's also an important first step. I don't think anybody thinks that this will be a comprehensive solution to affordable housing where we can just kind of forget it after this. And that's something that, again, I'll reiterate in my work out in the Jade International District, that it's a consistent concern for the communities that live out there. We've seen it through our organizing, our leadership development, and a visioning process that we just completed, where we interacted with the different communities that live out there, not just the API community, but Hispanic community. There's a Slavic community and a Somali community out there as well, and that concern is consistent among those groups. So with that, again, I'll just reiterate that we are in support. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Rachel Gilmer, and I'm with the Portland African American Leadership Forum. We are a network of Black leaders and organizations from across the metro region who work together to build a common policy agenda. We're here today to testify in support of Commissioner Saltzman's proposal to allocate 100% of the Airbnb tax towards affordable housing. You know, as has been mentioned, short-term rentals have exacerbated the shortage of affordable housing in other cities. And in Portland, we're already 20,000 units short. So we see this as a small but necessary step towards closing the gap on the shortage of rentals. Since our arrival in the state, African Americans have experienced continued displacement and upheaval at the hand of city policies and decision makers. From the Vanport floods to redlining to the establishment of the Interstate Urban Renewal Area, our local government has not simply failed our community, our local government has seriously eroded and damaged our ability to be successful and our well-being in the state. Over the past year and a half, our organization has been working closely with the community to address the issue of displacement, holding community forums and visioning sessions to identify challenge, needs, and hopes in the wake of gentrification, which has led to the displacement of an estimated 20,000 people since 2000 from Portland City Center. We met with a group of Jefferson High School students over about a month-long period to do visioning among youth, and we heard from them that they don't feel safe anywhere, not in their school, not on the street, not in the new seasons that just got built. They really don't feel safe anywhere. We did a forum with seniors, and one senior said, you know, if I were to die in my house, none of my neighbors would notice because I haven't built any connections with them. And then, you know, over and over and over again, one thing we keep hearing is that, you know, folks are being, you know, forced to couch surf or becoming homeless because of the lack of affordable rentals. So I just want to reiterate that it's a serious failure of our government that these individuals are really denied the opportunity to be successful or to have a strong sense of community or belonging in a city that, you know, I think we often boast is sort of the bastion of livability. And, you know, the statistics in our report that we presented last winter, you know, Unsettling Profile through the Coalition of Communities of Color, really reiterates these stories and really sheds further light on the crisis facing our community. 31% of African Americans own a home in comparison to 59% of their white counterparts. 43% of African Americans spend over 50% of their monthly household income on housing in comparison to just 25 white people. So, you know, these disparities coupled with the inequities experienced in other areas of life, economic opportunity, education, and health, to name a few, are getting worse and are really aggravating the already crisis-like conditions facing our community. So, you know, Portland is 20,000 units short of affordable housing, and as our city continues to grow at a rapid rate, we really have to decide, is this going to be a city that only serves the wealthy, or is this going to be a city that promotes livability for all and really centers those experiencing the greatest inequity in decisions? So, you know, as such, we're asking for the city council support in allocating 100% of the Airbnb tax towards affordable housing. Again, this is a small but very symbolic gesture towards serving and prioritizing the needs of the most vulnerable in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Can I ask a quick question? Can we provide that as a written supplement to our testimony?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Veronica Bernier was the last person who signed up.
Okay. Come on up.
Good afternoon, City Council members. Always good to see you. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioner Amanda Fritz, Commissioner Steve Novick. You're looking as nice as ever. He's so handsome. Don't you think he's handsome?
By the way, you used to say that about Randy Leonard, and now I'm convinced.
Oh, I did,
I'm
convinced, and see where it got me.
I'm just convinced, the light on the side of the room.
I'm convinced it's the person sitting in the chair that gets the love.
No, he's the youngest and most exuberant. And good morning. Well, it's afternoon. Mayor Charles Hales, you're always looking well. I like the fact that you brought this up. Commissioner Dan Salzman, as usual, you provided wise counsel to bringing up a motion that's often overlooked. And Commissioner Nick Fish, you're looking well, too, and I know that you probably talked with him about it. I think it's so important that our city acknowledge the homeless people that are campaigning and trying to get housing right now. And I think that it's very, very important that we underline the efforts that mothers and fathers sometimes do with their mother-in-law apartments and producing rentals for some of the economically challenged homeless people. The average rent for a mother-in-law apartment is probably $400. That's the going rate. But we still have many, 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 many people to house, and many projects like Aloha Gardens that do serve to rent to people who are in the lower MFI end of the income level. If I were in charge of it, I would basically fall back on a very old routine of floating a bond issue or something to raise money for the homeless housing, but that isn't too good right now because of the incredible big budgets for other things that we need for building and to keep commerce going. And to make the homeless seem like a win-win situation, I think it's good to send them to school and try to encourage them. My program is Dressed for Success. It's the seven-step success program for homeless that gets them up off the street. But I do support you're using the income-producing apartments and contributing the tax, I guess what they call it, the tax allotment or whatever it is, towards a general fund to raise the homeless dollar so that more people can be housed. And also, from the past, I wanted to bring up the SHAC program, SHACK, as a wonderful way for rotating church shelter to contribute to the overall market of available housing for homeless. This worked in the past, and it can be re-upped, so to speak, not in a military way, but in an interfaith council way. Thank you very much for your work.
Thank you. Okay, so I believe we're ready to take a roll call on the resolution.
Saltzman?
Well, this council has been generous with its investments in housing. I urge you to indulge your generosity right now and recognize that with this $500,000 in additional ongoing revenue, we can bond for $5 million. That's money that can be invested and is not constrained to be invested only in urban renewal areas, which I think all of us know constitute less than 15% of the geography of the city. There's a whole wide city out there that needs more investment in affordable rental housing. I think it's germane to do this today because we just passed the short-term rentals, legalizing and establishing the payment methods for the lodging tax. This seems to be the appropriate time to, as I said earlier, connect the dots and act decisively. I urge a yes vote, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Novick.
I think this is a proud day for the Portland City Council because we're having two, what I think will be 3-2 votes, where there's good arguments on both sides. And I think that demonstrates that we aren't just a body that only brings up things that are previously rubber-stamped by all of us, that we have lively discussions with good arguments on both sides. On this issue, I am going to vote no for a couple reasons. One is that I think one of the banes of American government today is the proliferation of thousands of different funding streams with strings attached, which require thousands of string tires to keep track of them. And I actually spend a significant portion of my time responding to emails from constituents who say, why don't you take the money from X and put it to Y? And I have to explain, well, the money from X has strings attached to it, so it can't go to Y. So I'm reluctant to add to that proliferation without a compelling reason. There's a couple of reasons why I don't think there's a compelling reason for this. One is, it's not enough money. We're talking about $500,000. This year, I think the city is spending $12 million of general fund on housing, primarily housing services. There's nothing to prevent us from dedicating this source of money to housing today, but then only giving $11 million of general fund to housing next year. There's nothing that would mandate that by adopting this today, we would actually increase the overall amount of money we're spending on housing. Another reason is that I want to preserve the possibility of possibly revisiting the authorization of these short-term rentals, because there have been concerns raised by housing advocates around the country that having these short-term rentals reduces housing affordability. So far, I don't think that we've got hard data on that. There haven't been peer-reviewed studies of that topic. And I don't share Commissioner Saltzman's pessimism about the idea that there never might be any studies that would be convincing. I suspect there's enough interest in this. There will be studies on that are reliable over the next couple of years. And if there is a study that shows that this practice is significantly reducing housing affordability, then I think we might want to revisit it and say, no, we are going to reban these short-term rentals and assign resources to enforcement. And I don't want our hands to be tied by the fact that, well, we think we've already dealt with this by dedicating the source of funding. I'm reminded of what's happened with urban renewal, where we have dedicated 30% of the urban renewal money to housing, and that is a big enough dollar amount to make a real difference. But a consequence of that is that if you are for housing, you have to be for continuing urban renewal, which I think is a problematic box to be in. I think that, as Commissioner Fritz has said in recent days more eloquently than I can, we need, as a council, to be making sure that we properly develop priorities for allocation of all of our general fund money, rather than making piecemeal allocations. And I think that I've demonstrated that I'm willing to offer up some tough choices in the service of the idea of prioritization. I recently proposed in the budget process making one time some of our drugs and vice positions in the police bureau and some of our command staff positions. And Commissioner Fritz joined me in supporting that. That would have somewhat increased the overall pot of money available for everything else, from parks to housing to seismic strengthening of buildings. The police are now doing a staffing study. And one suggestion that I've made to the contractor involved in the study is that the police keep on saying that although crime is down, they can't reduce their staff because they're expected to do all sorts of social service work now, for instance, work with the homeless. And I've suggested that the contractor analyze that claim and see if perhaps some of the money we now spend on police would actually be better allocated to providing social services and perhaps even housing for the homeless. So I agree that we need more money for housing, and am willing to engage in the discussion of how we prioritize more money for housing. And I appreciate the effort here. I appreciate Commissioner Saltzman and Fish's effort here. And I had a conversation with somebody in this room who said, we realize this is symbolic, but it's important symbol. And I recognize that's a reasonable position to take. But for the reasons I've just given, I will respectfully vote no.
Fritz?
I've participated in many votes on housing. I can't remember one that I voted against before. I sat right up there during the 30% set-aside campaign as a community organizer with my little sign. And I supported Commissioner Fish in 2012 when we put a budget note in directing the council to move into ongoing money the all of the work that really was ongoing, but we had one-time funded throughout the course of the recession. And that was one of the, I think it was $7 million. So when it's, we're talking about a dedicated stream of funding, we have a dedicated stream of funding. It's the Housing Bureau budget. And I believe I'm correct that in this last year's budget and this year's budget, we have added back everything that we took out. And if not, I'd be happy to consider additional requests in the Housing Bureau's budget next year. The fundamental problem with this issue is we've already dedicated this money. This $500,000 was in the city's budget for expected revenue because Airbnb had already said that they were going to tax their income regardless of whether we passed the regulations legalizing it. So that $500,000 was in the budget. The council, because we all care about affordable housing, allocated $1.25 million in ongoing money to the Housing Bureau. So the money, there isn't any more money that we know of. Next year we'll have an accurate assessment of how much money has actually come in. We'll then have maybe a little bit of additional money, which my guess is that much of that will go to housing, if not all. In fact, more than that. $1.25 million was about a quarter, one-fourth of all of the ongoing money that we had to allocate in the budget process. We have a budget process. We have a bump process so that additional one-time money, additional ongoing money, citizens are involved in deciding the different priorities, and almost everything that comes to us on a one-time basis, it's really important because people would not be sitting here if it wasn't important. So that's my fundamental concern, is we've already done what we're being asked to do. But second of all, we don't know whether there's going to be an impact from Airbnb. The kind of testimony we heard was from folks who are renting out a bedroom, delighted to welcome tourists from all over the world, doing it when they feel like it rather than full-time, and having a stream of visitors that sometimes their room is occupied, sometimes it's not. Those folks are not necessarily going to be people who have already been renting out their room full-time to a needy person. We don't know. We need to be able to study that. Because we're talking about rooms. The other thing that we've done in the regulations is stopped the renting out of whole houses. And we'll be able to track that now so that we'll be able to see, in fact, do those properties come back on the market or back into the rental inventory. So it's not at all proven. And a study in San Francisco showed that there wasn't an impact from the short-term rentals on the long-term affordable housing stock. So that it's both of those are kind of faulty premises. My primary concern, though, is that we make these decisions in a principled manner, looking at the whole budget with all of the needs. We have huge needs in housing. We have huge needs in parks, huge needs in transportation, and then we have a whole bunch of other things that also could make a worthy argument for funding. We shouldn't be dedicating ongoing funding in something that's only 1 month afterwards into the new fiscal year. No.
Fish.
First, I want to thank the Housing Commissioner, Dan Saltzman, for bringing this resolution forward. I remember when he first sat down and talked to me about it and explained it. After a while, the light went on in my head, and I thought it was a great idea. At that point, the proposal was 50% of the revenue. And through further conversations and some good lobbying from the outside, I think we both came to the conclusion that it really ought to be 100%. And that it was such a compelling argument. So, Dan, thank you for taking the lead on this, and I am extremely proud to support you. To the advocacy community that has been lobbying on this issue and making the case, folks who testified today to Street Roots, African American, Leadership Forum, APANO, Oregon On, all the folks in the trenches dealing with the affordable housing crisis, thank you for your advocacy, your passion around this issue. I want to make a few brief comments in recognition of the mayor's schedule, but I feel like this is an important moment. First, big picture. This council often takes actions which, while laudable on its face, have either intended or unintended consequences that negatively impact low-income people. I think the best example I can cite to is the commitment that councils have made historically to urban renewal. The idea that we want to revitalize areas that are distressed, on its face, a noble venture and a good use of public resources. But what we've learned, and the evidence has become very compelling thanks to census data and research, is that it often leads to gentrification, often leads to displacement, and displacement negatively impacts people who are the most vulnerable. So, big picture number one, we have some history here. Big picture number two is we are frequently criticized in light of our history of not going upstream and mitigating the impact of our decisions before they become acute. That is, we are asked, since you know that it is likely that there's going to be this negative impact, why weren't you upstream in the Albina district, upstream in other parts of our city, building in protections to mitigate the impact? All right, let's go from big picture to precedent. To me, this is a successor to a very successful experiment in this city called the 30% set aside. I went back and looked at some of the arguments that were raised when the 30% set aside was first floated. And I won't limit myself to the skepticism expressed by the then housing commissioner to the approach. I will talk about the editorial boards that said, for God's sake, you shouldn't use urban renewal money for this purpose. It's an inappropriate use of that source of funds. Or to housing advocates who said, my God, what if this ends up setting a ceiling and not a floor? Are we locking ourselves in? Echoes of what Commissioner Novick has said. Are we tethering ourselves to a source of funding which we may at some point want to withdraw? Or worse, are we creating a ceiling? There were some who said, that's not enough money to make an impact. Those were all valid issues to raise, but the reason it carried the day in the council is the council understood that there was a downside to urban renewal, and the downside to urban renewal could be in part mitigated with the 30% set-aside. Now, question, what is the most successful district that we've invested in the city of Portland over the last 20 years if we use as a benchmark the percentage of affordable housing and housing options within one district? Answer, drum roll, the River District. Now, that's not Nick Fish speaking. Actually, I think PolitiFact and the Oregonian once pointed that out. And they said that between 20 and 25% of the housing is affordable. Now, Charlie, that did not happen out of the goodness of the heart of developers. It happened, and you were back on the council in those days, it happened because the city had a 30% set-aside policy that had a dedicated source of money to invest in the River District, and we developed a plan that mandated affordable housing to go side by side with the market rate housing. And I would argue one of the great geniuses of the River District is that if you take a visitor from Portland through the district, they can't tell what's affordable and what's market rate. That so successful has been the integration of the housing that I defy you to tell me which building houses the lowest income people in our community and which the richest, because in fact many of the buildings are indistinguishable. So, big picture, precedent. Now let's go to the always important question about, is this good public policy? This is probably the highest IQ council I've ever served on, and frankly, everybody can come up with fabulous arguments. I am not the highest octane person on this council, and that's because my son and my daughter have told me. So I'm now going to say why it's compelling to me from a public policy point of view. We know as clear as day that by regulating and permitting short-term rentals, there will be an impact on the inventory of affordable housing. We know it because it speaks for itself. Steve, there's an expression in the law called res ipsa loquitur. A plane falls. There's an explosion. We can't get in and figure it out, but we say it's possible that there was a bomb on the plane. Res ipsa loquitur. We know, and the most compelling evidence that we have that says that we know there'll be a negative impact on short term in the immediate future of the inventory is the people who testified before us, the small landlords who said, my God, once you allow this, I can make a lot more money. We are affirmatively intervening in the marketplace and creating an incentive to move from long-term affordable to short-term higher income, higher return rentals. We're a market-based system. We are encouraging people to make more money. We hope they make more money. We'll get more revenues. But for God's sake, given that we know that, shouldn't we take at least this modest step to mitigate some of the impact? Okay, that's one piece of the policy. The second piece for me that's compelling is nexus. And we're all going to see nexus through a different filter. This is a new revenue stream. It's not a revenue stream that's been. It's been budgeted in one budget cycle, but in fairness to this resolution, it doesn't kick in until the next budget cycle. So we're not asking for a double dip this year. So what's the nexus? We think that by allowing this activity, that is short-term rentals, there'll be a downward pressure on the supply of affordable housing, and that it's therefore appropriate to take the revenue stream that would not occur but for our action in authorizing this activity and use it to dedicate it to mitigate the impact. And of course it's not enough money. And of course it's going to give Andrew Scott and his team a headache in tracking it. But by the way, so did the 30% set aside. All the same arguments were raised then, and a council unanimously said, we're going to take that leap because upstream we want to anticipate the negative consequences of our action. To my colleagues, this is a very modest step. And if we are fortunate and we have more discretionary resources to fight over in the coming year, I am quite confident that we'll all be advocating to put more money into the HIF, which will be Dan's potentially singular accomplishment as the housing commissioner, that he saw the need to take the HIF, put resources in it, and then recycle those resources for the benefit of our community. But here's my challenge. We can argue on the margins on this, but to me, it is as compelling as day. Why not be not just the first city that found a way to regulate short-term rentals in a way that we thought was responsible? What if we were the first city to also acknowledge that there's a negative impact of that activity, so we made a small investment in mitigating that impact? I urge this council to support this resolution, and I have rarely been as proud to partner with Dan on a matter as I am today. Aye.
Hales.
Well, I really appreciate, Dan, your leadership, and Nick, your passionate leadership on housing as well, and I think this, although we are in disagreement about this proposal, this council is in radical agreement about the need and about the need to do more. And let me just quickly reiterate what we have done in 18 months. In the worst budget downturn in history, when we laid off city employees and reduced the city's police bureau staffing quota by 50 positions, we held housing harmless. Then, as soon as we had some new money in the fall bump, we reinvested $1.7 million. We dedicated $20 million in the interstate urban renewal area to additional affordable housing over the next 5 years. And then in this budget, we put $2.25 million into additional housing investments as well, in 18 months. So we are in radical agreement about the need to do more, and I think it's fair to describe us as unanimously supportive of doing more. One of my jobs as mayor is to propose a budget. And I want to particularly subscribe to Steve's comments about strings attached. I want to always give this council the ability to exercise the wisdom that this council exercised in the last few budget decisions. I don't want this council or its successors to be like Gulliver, tied down with this little string and that little string, the way Congress is. That's one of Congress's excuses for how they fail to perform. I don't want it to be ours. I want to be able to give this council the ability to respond to a housing crisis and some future council the ability to respond to some crisis that we haven't discerned yet. And that's why, although my heart says this is a good idea and I see the nexus, my budgetary head says give everybody on this dais and those who come after us as much running room as possible to do the right thing then as we are doing the right thing now. And for that reason, I'm going to vote no. And with that, we are recessed until 2:15.
Thank you. Got it.